Orale! Bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. This is your host, Jorge Martin and Familia. Please make sure you're giving us a like and subscribe on YouTube. Por favor, it's, you know what, we just hit a milestone and we just want to keep growing this podcast. And on the YouTube side, on the audio side, please give us a like and subscribe and throw a review when you can. Also, we are a proud member of the Fantasy Points Media Group, Familia. FantasyPoints.com. This is the time you're getting back into fantasy. So many of you are getting ready for your redraft leagues. We got the best of the best coming out there. I mean, John Hansen, amigo of the show, Joe Dolan, Graham Barfield, Scott Barrett. I'm telling you, Tom Brawley, we got Wes Huber. So much great stuff coming out of Fantasy Points. And when you use the promo code Familia22, or if you want to do it in Spanish, Familia22, you get 10% off. So please make sure you get your subscription right there. And Familia, you know what? We've got a great guest joining us today. I'm telling you, you know what? This has always been one of the most frustrating teams to kind of handicap when it comes to looking forward to the season because, you know, on a given week, as we all love to say, Bill Belichick does not care about your fantasy football team. So, you know, one week they'll have a guy running the lead, and then the next week he's practically on the bench. So, man, amigo of the show, Joe Dolan, made the introduction to, covering the Patriots for the Boston Herald. He's also the host of the Pat's Interference podcast. I'm telling you, Andrew Callahan, it's such a pleasure to have you. Bienvenido, as we would like to say in Spanish, estás en tu casa. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Jorge. It's good to be here, man.
Oh, it's awesome. And you know what? I just want to give a quick congratulations because, as you mentioned on the Fantasy Points podcast with Joe Dolan, Jose, as I've called him more than once, you know, you recently got engaged. So I want to give you a big congratulations. I know you did it in España, one of the great countries. Doing it in a Spanish speaking country, you know, we welcome. But I will also want to give you one bit of advice that this man gave me on a golf course. Never met the guy one and only time, never saw him again. He told me he'd been married 40 years. And he said, I asked him what the secret was. And he said, every day you choose marriage. So passing along that advice from that, this is now almost 22 years ago that this man gave me this advice. So I'll pass it on to you. So, you know, congratulations again to you and your fiance. Enjoy this time and enjoy the many, many years ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, we're trying to squeeze as much as we can in the next few days before training camp starts, because then every day I'm going to have to choose between football and marriage. But we're getting there. It's been great.
Well, you know what? Spouses who marry into the sports media, they know that there's a trade off when it comes to the job. And when you're a beat writer, it's, you know, it's a 24/7 job. So I know it comes out because we both have the same hair because that's what the job does to you. I wanted to ask, this is such an intriguing team going into the 2022 season. Longtime offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels is gone. So onto Vegas with the Raiders. So now we've got one play caller, maybe two play callers, Joe Judge, Matt Patricia. You had a very interesting recent article in the Boston Herald talking about kind of like the streamlining of the offense. Can you kind of share how that is going to impact Mac Jones going into year two, which a lot of times coming off a great season, a lot of times it become, you know, that's when the greatest growth is for a quarterback.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, Bill Belichick even disclosed, and the word streamlined was his, that the offense has changed and it's essentially become simplified. And it's not something that's necessarily unique to this year. They've done it in the past, but more often than not, they were building out the offense, right? Tom Brady was the hub. He was a historian. He was the engine, the electricity, everything flowed from him. Now you're having to reset, not only just with a new quarterback, but a quarterback who's kind of mastered the system, and yet you're bringing him back anyway. So I think the dynamic is to bring, you know, along Joe Judge and Matt Patricia, who are installing the new terminology. And if you're teaching less, you know, you should be able to rep it more, right? So that both goes for the coaches and the quarterback. I think for the Patriots, you know, this isn't necessarily scheme related, but you look at the down year Nelson Aguilar had. I think he's due for some positive regression. And even you look at historically at his, you know, career numbers or just the rate of catchable passes he saw last year, it was way below everybody else. You bring in Devontae Parker, someone you can trust third downs in the red zone. I think this pass game will get more vertical this year, an area where Mac Jones struggled a year ago and had some success in college because you've got better weapons. And I think he'll just rep those same plays where he was a little tentative last year, but improving his body, changing the scheme, getting better weapons around him, I think will help that offense go a little bit further downfield.
So that I think that that's interesting because he, I mean, that could be, that could lead to more touchdowns. He's right now in the teens when it comes to quarterbacks being taken. I mean, he's a popular pick as kind of like the second quarterback in fantasy, maybe either as a backup or as the number two quarterback in Superflex. You know, with that increased shots downfield, and as you mentioned, he was a beast when he was at Alabama. With obviously he had he was throwing the first round draft picks, which he's not necessarily throwing to now. Well, Devontae Parker is, but that was quite a few years ago. When you're looking at him, is that where he could maybe, you know, kind of like start to scratch at that top, you know, the top 12 quarterbacks, which we all love to talk about?
Yeah, I think so. And that's not only goes for fantasy, but reality, right? You know, you'd probably put him 14, 15, 16 somewhere if you were making a list of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And that was the only area that really held him back. You look at his accuracy within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, his release time, you know, his turnover rate, like all of those were well above average. And then you just go to the deep passing game, and that was the missing part. He would work well down the seams, but sometimes it's these deep outs or you're having a cross field throw, like these drive throws where you're putting a little more oomph on it. That's where it lacked. He's got excellent touch. So we saw some of this develop in minicamp, even throwing to guys like Trey Nixon, who, you know, was going undrafted, but seventh round pick in 2021. He's got speed to burn, and the two of them connected a lot deep, which was progress not only just for Trey, but for Mac. So I think that will be the last piece of the puzzle. He's never going to rush for any sort of touchdowns or count him on for some extra yards or kind of create his own offense. But if he can be a statuesque passer who adds a deep component to his passing game and thrives there, he's got almost as well-rounded a game as anyone in the league. Not to say it's better than anyone, but you just don't have many weak points within the pocket.
And you mentioned a little more increased use in RPOs. Could that really help?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they had Bill O'Brien in for a visit this offseason, and that's notable, of course, because Alabama last year ran about, you know, a third of their plays were RPOs. And, of course, some of those were handoffs, others were passing plays, but Mac Jones, you know, about 19 to 20% of all of his attempts at Alabama were RPO. So he's very familiar with these concepts, and it's a way to, you know, help yourself if you're dealing with some question marks in the offensive line. They have two new starting guards this year. You know, Mac Jones, if you want to create more explosive plays, sometimes he'll have a second level RPO where it's not maybe a quick slant, but you've got a post over the middle. Like, so he's prepared with these. O'Brien comes in. If you're simplifying the offense, these are plays that have built-in flexibility. You don't need option routes. It's the options all in the quarterback for a guy who processes quickly and gets rid of the ball even faster. These plays suit them. We haven't seen a whole lot of them yet, but I really would not be surprised if you starting next week with training camp, we start to see more introduction of those concepts.
Oh, fantastic. So I hinted a little bit about the running back situation. Two talented runners are at the top of the pecking order right now. You got Damian Harris, had a phenomenal season at 15 touchdowns. You had Ramondre Stevenson, who really caught fire there at the end of the season. I had kind of pegged him as a bit of a sleeper coming into the season. There were some, you know, I love the comparisons that on him, and he seemed to deliver, which isn't always the case for rookies. I think both are worth drafting, but how do you see the touches kind of breaking down between the two of them?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think for now, firmly entrenched as a starter is Damian Harris. You know, you don't come off a 15 touchdown season the way he played and then suddenly give the job up. That being said, you know, we've had this year two discussion about Mac Jones basically since the season ended in January. That also applies for Ramondre Stevenson because historically, he's an outlier. Like rookie running backs taken in the middle rounds, including Damian Harris, James White, Shane Vereen, they just don't play in New England. Stevenson played a lot. Part of that was due to injury, and there's opportunity. But, you know, he proved himself a capable pass-catching back, arguably the best receiver out of the backfield of this entire group. And we'll see how healthy James White is. But I think he's a more naturally talented runner than Damian Harris, maybe not by leaps and bounds, but from the glimpses we saw last year, he's already breaking tackles at a higher rate than Damian does. And so he's a guy that I think if Damian Harris misses a few games, which he has the last couple of years, could step in and maybe run away with the job. But he'll need to lock up his fumbling. First game of the year last year against Miami, he cuffs up a fumble, goes into the doghouse. That's not going to be tolerated. But I think he has everything going for him from his progression as a second-year player, his natural talent, the all-around nature of his game, where if James White can't get over his hip injury, which sidelined him since week 3 last year, Ramondre Stevenson is the first guy to step in as a third down back, and that's a guy obviously you want on your fantasy team when he plays for the Patriots.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. And, you know, there's some other guys, rookies, Pierre Strong, Kevin Harris. I mean, are we just kind of looking more of them on the waiver wire if injuries call for more carries for them?
Yeah. If you're drafting anytime around whenever this podcast launches, like, don't waste a draft pick on either of them. I think it's, you know, again, partly the history that I just alluded to, all of these mm-hmm. great backs developed year two and on. Stevenson's the outlier. I think they like Pierre Strong a whole lot, but he's another guy who had fumbling issues at South Dakota State. So those are things that they're going to hammer out in training camp. And you need to see him on the field because OTAs and mini camp are fine, but no one's wearing any pads. No one's getting hit. No one's punching out for the ball. Like, we'll learn a lot more about those two during the second week of camp when they can put the pads on in day seven, which should be August 1st up until that first preseason game. So I wouldn't pay any attention to them until we start to get there. And then obviously the last two preseason games too.
So now I'm going to ask you about to kind of help me kind of the pass catching situation. I mean, there's so many guys out there that the income, you talked about Nelson Agholor, you've got that Kendrick Bourne, you got Jacoby Myers. Yes. Thank you. He finally got in the end zone, traded for Devontae Parker. And then they drafted Tyquan Thornton in the second round, who a lot of people really liked, one of the fastest receivers. I think he was the fastest receiver at the combine. How are the targets going to shape up and maybe some touches? I know Kendrick Bourne got some carries that last year. How did the targets shape up?
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult to tell, I think, partly because injuries are going to come into this, right, as I always have for Devontae Parker, who right now on paper you'd install as the quote-unquote number one. But what does number one really mean in New England? I mean, for so long, number one was Gronk or Julian Edelman, slot receiver, tight end. You don't typically assign this big production, this big role. But for Parker, I think if he stays healthy, he should lead the team in receiving yards. Catches is another discussion for people who play PPR, half-point PPR. Like, Jacoby Myers is there, and I think, you know, again, he broke the touchdown curse, as you said. So those are solid options. But I think the safest pick, accounting for injuries and opportunity, is going to be Kendrick Bourne, because he was a player before they signed him in free agency. I targeted as a good fit as someone who kind of had some untapped potential, because you look at his, you know, average separation in the next gen stats, his yards after the catch that he made over what were expected based on how close the defender was. Like, this is a guy who's going to run away from you and break tackles. So, you know, I think they're only going to add to his plate this season, which, of course, with fantasy always means good news. And he's got a good injury history. So I don't think Kendrick Bourne is going to go leaps and bounds better than, I think, 800 yards he had last year. You know, but that was really good, particularly because he was, I think, at 55 catches. So that's second on the team. He's getting the opportunity, plays inside and out, and, you know, had a touchdown in the playoffs, which was rare in that beatdown in Buffalo. So I think that's a guy Mac connects with and they're really happy with.
Oh man, and you mentioned Agholor getting more down, you know, more downfield passes. I mean, with Jones improving in that area of the game, I mean, he possibly be a streaming option or maybe someone that could help you on best ball. Correct?
Yeah, I like the streaming option. I think I told Joe that he might be a guy that swings a week or two here for you, depending on who you happen to buy, or if it's close and he just gets an extra touchdown because, you know, the stat I cited him kind of alluded to here and to mention on my podcast, like, just do it's too many times. This is the last time I'm going to say it, but the rate of catchable passes of all the Patriots receivers saw downfield, so you're talking 20 yards or further, you know, everyone else saw around 50%, and Nelson was below 40, worse than the team. So I think that just speaks to bad luck. Like, whenever Mac was looking for him deep, he just didn't have the right touch or enough oomph on those balls. If he just goes up to 50%, you're talking about a couple more catches, another 60, you know, 50 yards, another touchdown. Like, that bumps up his season totals closer to 600, 700, we were saying. Maybe he breaks out for 1,000 this year and changes the whole framework of the discussion around him. So it's just tough with those players because they're very high variance, right? Like, it's boom or bust. It's a high ceiling or low floor. That's always who he's going to be. I just think he was much closer to his floor last year than the ceiling. So he'll come up somewhere in the middle, and I would target for a streaming option for a lot of teams that, you know, might play single high or vulnerable to the deep ball. That's when I take a shot on Nelson Agholor.
Last one on the skill players, the tight ends. Jonnu Smith wasn't as advertised, even though his numbers kind of came out similar to what he had in Tennessee. Hunter Henry scored a few touchdowns. Are we kind of similar? Because these are more streaming options, kind of like they're in the teens, not the, you know, surefire starting tight ends in a number, you know, in a 12 team league.
Yeah, I would lean towards Hunter Henry. Obviously, the better numbers last year makes that an easy decision, but I think he's just steady. You know, like I think I roffered him in the only league that I was playing last year, and it was just like you just kind of set it and forget it. And tight end, obviously, you want to grab one of those top guys, and there's a drop off. But he and Mac had a very early chemistry that was very obvious, and this was even after a so-so training camp last year. But once they got to play, like he's a guy who excels versus zone coverage, and they see, you know, a fair amount of that, and it'll depend on the matchup. But like in the red zone, he's a big target, was early on, start of the season. Like these guys just have a lot of trust built up that you don't see typically with rookie quarterbacks. And rookie quarterbacks, of course, you know, playing in their first year with a veteran like Hunter Henry. So these guys, I'll tell you, were also neighbors, you know, like in their own houses. So like there's a bond there, and I would trust that. I think Jonnu Smith is due for some positive regression, but the season that we saw in Tennessee, even when he can't eclipse 500 yards, he would have 8 touchdowns. I just don't think there's 8 touchdowns here for him in this offense, with not because they have so many great weapons, but there are more viable options around him than there were even last year, which was obviously a down season.
So you mentioned playing fantasy. The your league mates, do they sometimes use your information against you?
Well, it was mostly comprised of other NFL writers. So I fell facing up the time because I've been a very casual player, but it's a nice way to kind of, you know, look at the league a little bit differently. And sometimes it's just your only prism, depending on, you know, who you are, how invested. So I use that to know, you know, who is the fourth string running back for the Ravens. Of course, you needed to pick up last year with all their injuries, because that stuff, otherwise I wouldn't have known. So yeah, it's probably vice versa, if I'm being honest.
Hey, even better, when you the fountain of information. This is why I do this series, because I just think that the people who cover the teams on a regular basis in the locker rooms, on the field, I mean, you just get a different perspective, and I can delineate it a little bit toward fantasy. So that's why, again, I appreciate you doing this. This is just fantastic information. Two other football related questions. The offensive line, PFF ranked at number 7 going into the season. When the Patriots are good, the offensive line is good. Is this kind of shaping up as another unit that's going to be, again, I mean, live up to that number 7 billing?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think in normal years, you know, you could really count on them. And it's not so much the offensive line, but Brady would just get rid of the ball so quickly, right? So you're going to have Edelman's going to be a PPR star, you know, Gronk, of course, down the seam like that. That was fine. There's a little more variance this year, where they're not going to definitely be somewhere 5 to 10 in your rankings, PFS or whomever's. But I think you could see this group go all the way up to, you know, the top 3 or 5, or come all the way down to league average. And that's because of a couple of things. Cole Strange obviously is a first round rookie at left guard, mm-hmm. Someone who was drafted way earlier than most expected. Doesn't mean he can't live up to the first round billing, but it's a lot. Second thing is they've switched their offensive tackle. So Trent Brown, who played right tackle last year, is on the left side. And Isaiah Wynn, who has only taken a couple preseason snaps at right tackle, is now on the right side full time. So the coaches claim it was just to create depth during minicamp. But minicamp is also a time when you're installing the entire offense. And Isaiah Wynn is taking extra snaps with Matt Patricia, the new offensive line coach, on how to drill, take his drop stuff, and get in on the right side, because it's all very new to him. So I think this is a team, we talked about scheme earlier, they pivot to a zone running game, which we're expecting. I think that suits both of their skill sets. According to PFF, these are some of the best zone blockers in Wynn and Brown that you would see. Cole Strange is exceptionally athletic, and they can make it work. There's just a lot more moving parts here, even if you're just switching sides, which they can go back and it should be fine. But to me, this says they were not happy with Isaiah Wynn as much as they would like to be on the left side. So they switched. Trent Brown played left side in 2018 when they last won the Super Bowl. And they're going to give this a go. But there might be some growing pains along the way.
And how about on the defensive side? I think you've written that they're younger, which sometimes can lead to growing pains at the beginning of the season. And we've seen Belichick defenses kind of build during the season. How do they shape up first against the pass and then against the run?
Yeah, I would steer clear of the Patriots defense if you're in a league drafting defense. And I think if you have, you know, a top tier running back or receiver, go nuts. You know, like this is a defense that's going to make feast or famine based on turnovers, because their cornerbacks right now are Jalen Mills, who made himself into a very solid, sturdy, steady number 2 last year. And then either Malcolm Butler, who's coming off of retirement, Terrence Mitchell, who's a journeyman, or Jack Jones, who's a 4th-round pick at Arizona State, a 4th-round pick many thought was a reach all the way up there. And some of that was due to off-field issues. He's a guy who's got a lot of natural talent. But if one of those 3 don't hit, and I would say the odds are probably less than 33%, which means they could really be in trouble. Jalen Mills is shadowing all these guys that they're going to see from from Stephon Diggs twice a year. Tyreek Hill might get a piece of him. You even got Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen coming up on Thanksgiving. Like, it's going to be a rough slate. And you go into the front seven, it was a very good run defense for the first 12 to 14 weeks of the season. Whatever happened, just like it did with the rest of the team, fell completely apart after the bye week. And they've got a lot of solid guys. But the only one that would keep you up at night, the night before the game, in that front seven, if you're, you know, an opposing offensive coordinator, is Matt Judon, who, you know, set a career high in sacks and made the Pro Bowl. But it's a guy that if you've got a really good left tackle or right tackle, you're just not worrying about him. So he's a good player, a very good player. But as far from a fantasy standpoint, I think you can run at these guys. I think they'll be tested early. And if you've got, you know, a good quarterback or receiver or against them, even just top 10, top 15, roll them out. The Patriots are no way kind of standing in the way of big points and a big Sunday for you.
All right. All right. Andrew, I mean, muchas gracias. This was fantastic. Wow. This was fantastic. So I always love to end on a high note, which food, you know, this being the Familia FFP podcast, we love to talk food on this podcast. And this has been great about this series is I get to find out about the Mexican food scenes in the particular regions that we're talking about. The Boston area, I've been there one time, phenomenal weekend that I spent there, even saw a Red Sox game. The seafood was incredible.
Yeah.
When it comes to Mexican food, does it, especially tacos, does it gear toward seafood or what are some of the favorites?
Yeah, I think they go with a pretty much standard, like you'll have your carnitas and, you know, typical beef and chicken. And there's a place I recently moved somewhere outside the city and, you know, it's got your kind of standard 3-star reviews everywhere. It's like solid. If you need a burrito, your tacos to go, like it's good. There was a place though in Fenway, which I'm going to look up now because it's worth giving them a shout out. Whenever I would go to Sox games, sometimes before or after or both, I would stop by here for a burrito because it was outstanding. And so if you're in the area, I'll find it right here because they are not the 3-star normal place you'll find. I think they were around 4 or 5, and I had this many times, as you can tell. It might have been late at night when I was something else. this was El Pelon Taqueria. You can help me with that. But yeah, El Pelon was outstanding. So yeah, if you're ever in the city, if you're going to Red Sox games, stop by El Pelon.
Do you know what El Pelon means?
I did once upon a time. So a lot of the head, yeah.
Shaved head. Yeah. Le Pelon. Yeah. No.
Yeah, now you know why I like it. And I'm sure you might too. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it. I'm going to give them a shout out on Twitter and also on the YouTube. So, Andrew, thank you. This is awesome. This is awesome. What a high note. El Pelon Taqueria is the go-to place in Boston. When you go to Red Sox games, it's still one of the great experiences I ever had. So I saw Roger Clemens' final start as a member of the Red Sox against the Yankees of all things. Got really lucky. Bought tickets like 2 months in advance, and it just so happened it was that because I was going to be there that weekend. So gotta love it, Andrew. I'm gonna put the banner up for you, but please pump away what you got coming up for training camp and also the Pats Interference podcast. Please feel free.
Yeah, thanks. We're going to have Joel Dolan on soon to break down everything Fantasy Patriots, which I'm sure if you're listening to him, you heard what my spiel is, but he'll have a different perspective on that. So Pats Interference comes out once a week. It'll ramp up to twice a week during the season. Until then, we have a daily countdown leading into training camp. Anything you need to know, everything you need to know, offense, defense, coaching staff, special teams, like it's all on the table. So Mac is the headliner. The running backs are probably your best bets in fantasy, but any sleepers across any of Find My Notes, I'm typically pulling up 2,000 words a day from training camp and every little thing I saw. So that's where you start to get the notes at Feed Fantasy. And it's coming up next week when they open training camp on Wednesday the 27th.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. This is why we get beat writers on here, Familia. These are the people who are getting the inside story and the NFL insider. So, Andrew, muchas gracias, and Familia. Eso es todo for our show. Once again, thank you to our invitado de lujo. Thank you, Andrew. Also, please make sure when you're going to fantasypoints.com, put in that promo code FAMILIA22 and get that 10% off. And also, make sure you're going to our YouTube page. If you haven't already subscribed, por favor, or if you want to go to the audio, we are on Anchor. So Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there for you. We're going to be there. We're giving you the fantasy football con sabor Latino all through the off season and during the season, getting ready for your drafts. And also go to familiaffp.com for original content and Facebook, Twitter, go Facebook, Instagram, go to Familia FFB, but you can get me at Jorge Martin 17. I push everything out on Twitter there. So otra vez, to Andrew, muchas gracias. And to you, everybody, thank you. And remember, todos somos familia. Salud.